This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, throw a grape across the room for language to catch in its mouth, then I clean grapes off the floor. This is the last food season episode in the current batch, and it's about something that I find hard to stomach. On with the show. Since I started The Allusionist nearly 5 years ago, I've managed to overcome most of my linguistic prejudices. Literally also means its own opposite. That's fine, meanings flip all the time. Someone said me when they meant I, or vice versa. Mate, the only pronoun trouble I care about now is people's gender identities being respected. There's a rogue apostrophe and a shop sign. Whatever, not a high priority for the world right now. Maybe I could encourage Moss to grow over it. But there are a few linguistic peeves that still lurk and irk, and one of them, and this is so ridiculous, there could scarcely be a more trivial non-problem, but it's this. When I'm eating out, and the server brings the food, and they say, "Enjoy," this immediately provokes an internal shout of, "Well, what did you think I was planning to do with it?" Also, I feel that the word "enjoy" should not be used as a command, and if you can follow something with "or else," it doesn't come across as that friendly. But enjoy happens, and it happens a lot, and in the interest of examining and exterminating my prejudice, I want to know what it's for.
My name is Sarah Brooke Curtis, and I'm an independent radio producer, and I worked in restaurants in the front of the house as a server for about 15 years.
Wow.
And yes, I was really fascinated by watching people, kind of what they reveal about themselves at the table, which is a lot. Their own kind of insecurities, their identity, their issues, their really dark side, their ugly side, their beautiful side. It all seemed to come out around the table. I felt like I was sort of led into this secret club where I had access to psychology.
All right, Sarah, analyze what enjoy is for.
You need to have some sort of parting words, letting people know that you're like excited for them to have their meal, like go for it. You have to find a way to exit and also let them know that you're like in this experience with them. So it's some sort of signpost.
Well, if they said bon appetit, it would sound very pretentious, although that's really what they're doing, right? In French culture, that's what you say, and it's polite to say that.
Stephanie Robson is a restaurant design psychologist and senior lecturer at Cornell University.
We don't really, I think, have anything in English that is the parallel to the French bon appetit, you know, good appetite, you wouldn't say that. So enjoy, I guess it's just a way of acknowledging that, you know, let the eating commence. But to just put food down and not say anything, I don't know. Now that you've got me thinking about it, I don't know what I would say.
It's food.
It's food. It's like you're feeding a spaniel. It's food. Here you go, Buffy, eat this.
I suppose if you were in a home setting, you might say tuck in or dig in or something like that.
That's right. That's right. Here you go.
Yes.
Which is a little cash. You know, you're sitting in a very high-end restaurant. They don't go, here you go. So I guess the enjoy is some kind of verbal signal that says, I am here as a server. I'm a presence. And this is me giving something to you. And if you do that without any kind of verbal interaction, it feels very transactional.
Some of the more transactional phrases, such as saying the name of the dish as they place it in front of the diner, or asking something like, can I get you anything else? These seem usefully functional to me, as they ensure that the diner is receiving the correct food that they ordered and ascertain whether or not they have further requirements. Plus, these epithets are emotionally neutral. What's wrong with me?
But yes, enjoy is an interesting choice. We should maybe move to consume.
I doubt enjoy can create enjoyment from scratch, but I do imagine that it does work better to encourage enjoyment than more negative terms might. Alas, I could not find scientific analysis of this. Test subject. Which tastes better? Bite A?
Enjoy.
Or bite B?
I found this in the gutter.
Spit, swill, mouth. Which tastes better? Bite C?
Enjoy.
Or bite D?
Nobody loves you.
An interesting thing with enjoy is that it's become so common. So many people do it in all their different restaurants to such an extent that there are restaurants that you could not say enjoy. That was their biggest pet peeve. Ooh. Was saying enjoy. And it was,
why?
massive because they didn't want their servers to act like robots. And they thought that if you said enjoy, that people would feel like they're anywhere and that you're not expressing anything. You're just like saying this thing that people say all the time.
Then where does it come from? Is there this cabal, like the Pantone color thing where it's like this year everyone will be wearing forest green? Is there that for service vocabulary?
Yeah, I think there is. I really do think there is. You know, there's not like a hub or like some finishing school you go to for restaurant vocabulary that then everyone goes back to the restaurants and like, all right, now we have it, guys. but how does that stuff travel? That's really interesting to think about.
That might be because some servers move from one restaurant to the next because it's a pretty transient business.
I do think that it's probably some of it does get handed down from these like reality cooking shows and all that kind of stuff. I think that that is a part of it.
So sometimes it's spread virally. Other times it's in a restaurant's manual or script.
It's deliberate with chain restaurants because often they script a lot of it. With independent restaurants, not so much. But there are some things that you try to teach people in restaurant service that are fairly consistent. You know, you want to be clear, you want to be friendly. It's also because you've got to be fast. What we sell in restaurants is time, not so much food. So a server has to be able to communicate effectively pretty quickly in order to get that table served and turned ready for the next party.
And presumably it differs at different economic levels as well, because some places want to cultivate an informal atmosphere, some of them want to be upscale.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the language you're going to use, how you approach a table, you know, a lot of restaurants will use very familiar language. Like they'll say, how are you guys tonight? Which you would never do, or I would hope you would never do in a more formal setting. And the more formal setting, of course, there's the usual sort of preamble about, you know, have you been here before? And do you know how we work? And which can be aggravating for a lot of people.
Yeah. I think a lot of things that are meant to make us feel comfortable make us feel very annoyed. Like when they say, let me explain how the menu works. And it's pretty much always intuitive.
Yeah, it sort of is a bit of a slap in the face. And also there's this feeling that they're trying to upsell you. You know, let me explain how the menu works. Most people order 4 small plates, 2 of them protein, and have great lashings of wine. You know, you always feel like they're completely upselling you and not letting you decide for yourself.
Yes, there's definitely scripts. But I think in general, it's more nuanced than an actual script. It's more like, here are things you cannot say. And here are things that we really want you to say. There are restaurants that literally there's language you cannot use at the table. And if a manager or the owner catches you using it, like, it's a big deal. Because language is huge around the table. Like huge, 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 huge.
So what would be some examples of things you could not say? I'm imagining obviously the stronger swear words for a start would be off the menu.
Well, there was a restaurant that I worked that there was an olive dish that a lot of people ordered and the olives had pits in them. And you were not allowed to say, be careful, there are pits in the olives, because it immediately, their thought is that it plants the seed of fear before they're consuming food. So if you say, be careful, it immediately puts people on guard as opposed to feeling relaxed, like everything's taken care of for them. So instead you have to actually like be more long-winded, because what do you say to let someone know right away there's pits so they don't swallow them and choke? Say like, just so you know, there are pits in the olives. You just can't say, be careful.
Would you be allowed to be kind of hyperbolically cautious where you would like, there are pits in the olives, so don't smash your teeth with one?
Oh no, because I think we don't want to suggest that there could be an issue. You know what I mean? It's sort of an art, really, of letting people know that there's sort of an obstacle to consuming this food safely, but that they're going to be okay, but you haven't taken care of it for them, so they have to do it on their own. It's really like a strange dance to figure out what language to use for that. And same thing with plates being very hot. So you got to put it down. And instead of saying, be careful, you have to just try and say, like, just so you know, the plates are very hot. But you don't say, the plates are very hot, so I don't want you to burn yourself. Because then someone's thinking, oh God, I'm going to burn myself. Even though that's what is implied by saying the plates are hot. It's another thing you're not supposed to say. And this is the case in any restaurant I've worked, even though people say it a lot. If a server's coming to the table to check to see if you're done eating, you're not supposed to say, are you still working on that?
Oh, you just hit one that I hate. Are you still working on that? One thing that I was trained to do as a child, and maybe you were too, which was to place your knife and fork in a specific position to indicate you were finished. And I gather that is a lost art because you don't see people doing it. And so servers have to sort of figure out what the state of your meal is and whether it's safe to clear, but are you still working on that implies that, you know, you're at a coal face or something and you're trying to chip away at it.
But do you know what the thinking is around that?
I'd love to know.
You don't want anyone to be thinking about work. You don't want them to be thinking that food is work and their experience at a restaurant has any relationship to work. Even though working isn't implying that kind of working. Just the idea that you're saying something that's related to, say, their day beforehand, it takes them away from the experience. And you don't want them to have to do any work the whole night. You just want them to be completely taken care of. And that is the hardest one because it's just, yeah, it's like, are you still working on that? Are you still working on that? And actually, maybe you're going to hate this one. What you're supposed to say is, are you still enjoying?
That's very presumptuous.
It sure is. Some restaurants, they want to be confident in that, like, you know, if somebody hasn't said they don't like something, like the assumption is that they are, and that moment can give them a way out. You know, for some reason they aren't enjoying something that could come out there. I don't know.
It's certainly a good idea to go with that presumption of enjoyment.
Yeah.
That probably does work psychologically.
Right, right.
To an extent.
Exactly. But then some people are like, yeah, I'm still enjoying. And then it's the same thing where like some servers go back way too many times and like, yes, I'm still enjoying. And then it's like, are you really still enjoying? I don't think you're enjoying anymore.
Oh, that's the problem with enjoy. I don't think you can use it more than once a meal. I don't think you can say enjoy every time you put down a course because then it really does seem automated.
I know.
And like, you know, you had your chance with the salad to enjoy this and you still haven't learned. So I've still got to keep telling you.
Okay, so... No, enjoy. No, be careful. No, are you still working on that? No. No, are you done yet either? Mm. The thing you're supposed to say is, may I? May I? You sort of do this like little hand motion towards the table if you think that someone's done. May I go in and remove the plates? But not, are you done? Because you don't want people to feel rushed.
But yeah, are you still working on that? Please, everybody, knife, fork, parallel, in the middle of the plate.
Or put a little traffic light next to you.
Well, there are restaurants that do that, but it's not about clearing. But you've probably been to these Brazilian steakhouses that give you the little disc that's red on one side and green on the other. And you just flip it on your table when you want someone to come to your table and deliver you huge piles of meat or whatever it is you need. But to me, it's very cunning because... You know, when you're trying to enjoy a meal and the server's kind of hovering and trying to get a sense of, should I go back to the kitchen and tell them to get the next course ready or should I be clearing something? It's nice when you have that kind of nonverbal way of communicating, yep, you're good to go, or no, I'm in the middle of a really dishy bit of gossip. Please don't bother me.
Yeah, I appreciate that it's difficult to gauge where someone is at with their meal, but I like to be served and then kind of benevolently ignored. So if I need something, I can catch someone's eye, but they don't come up every few minutes and check, or specifically after you've just put your first mouthful of food in, they come up and are like, how's everything tasting? You're like, it's too soon. It's too soon.
It's too soon. And they have the same talent that dentists do of asking you something that requires a verbal response when you obviously cannot give one. But no, it's true that a really good server, one of the best things they can do is learn to read people. And, you know, read what kind of experience they want to have. But part of that is also how you design the restaurant, believe it or not, is servers have to be able to see what's happening at their tables. And if you design a restaurant with a lot of booths or high-backed things where you can't see what's going on the table, the server's going to be floating around just so they can kind of get a sense of what they should be doing next. A good server, anyway. But you're right. There is an art to being... supportive without being intrusive.
I appreciate as well that what the servers want to do or know is effective may not be what management expects them to do.
Well, that's true. You know, this is a real challenge because you get servers who realize their table wants to stay a little longer And if there's nobody waiting for a table, that's fine. They can stay as long as they like, you know, just keep, you know, offering them additional items or bringing them coffee or whatever it is. But when there's a wait for a table, there's real pressure both from management and from the server to get that table turned over. But it's true that management sometimes would like there to be, how do I put this? I won't say less rapport at the table, but their goal is, you know, get that table going. And the server might think, you know, if I have good rapport with this guest, it may turn into a better tip. So this is something I know that in some parts of the world where tipping is not the way it is in the United States, it's probably less of an issue. But in the US, most restaurants still rely very heavily on tips for their servers. And so servers are very, very sensitive to how can they create the environment that will maximize the tip without being so annoying that that tip is jeopardized.
Yeah. And I feel bad that in the US in particular, it's just more obvious when someone is doing something because they desperately need you to tip them. And therefore, they're kind of being punished for a bad system that isn't their fault and that they have to participate in to get paid.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Then on top of this, and the many practical and physical and emotional demands of service, there are the customers with their infinite variety of quirks and sensibilities.
Some people say, like, how are things tasting? And I always thought that was fine. And I have a friend recently who we were talking about this stuff, and she was like, it makes me so grossed out. Like, I can't believe someone will ask me that. Like, how are things tasting? It just sounds wow. disgusting to me. And she was like, I feel like it's almost too intimate. Like, how are things tasting?
Because it's inside your mouth.
Exactly. Right. Even though, like, it could, you know, it means something sort of larger. Like, how is your meal tasting? Like, are you enjoying it? It's just another way of saying it. But she is like, oh, she said it gives her the heebie-jeebies. Like, how are things tasting?
God, there's so much to be annoyed about. Maybe it'd be better if just restaurants are entirely conducted in silence. Or emoji. You just do thumbs up all the time.
There you go. You know, I'm sure that's coming. But then there's, like, I mean, there's an art to it. It keeps it interesting, keeps it dynamic, because people want really different things, right? Like, people are coming to the table with such different experiences and set of expectations and, you know, just days, like the days that lead up to whatever is bringing them to that moment. And you don't have any idea what's going to trigger somebody.
Can't please everyone.
It can't please everybody.
I guess in our societies, anyway, it's one of the only circumstances remaining that most of us have where there's an element of servility in the interaction. And I think for some people that's uncomfortable. Like for me, I'd rather the ground swallow me up than ever complain about the food. And I think for other people, they really love the idea that they're kind of dominant.
Love it. Love it. But then there's also, there's like a downfall of both sides. I mean, there's people who never want to complain, who then get to the end of the meal and decide to say something then, like, yeah, just so you know, like, the fish was kind of meh. I wouldn't get it again. That's actually, like, the biggest heartbreaker for people who work in restaurants, because it's like, you're trying the whole time to make this person have the most incredible experience they possibly can. And it's all about trying to, like, read people's body language. But at the same time, you're only really responsible for what their words are saying, because you can't, you know, read everybody's minds and be like, you know, they raise their eyebrow that way, they must like it or not like it. You can't, if somebody hasn't used their words the whole time to tell you that they are unhappy with something, you have no opportunity to fix it. And so at the end, when you find out, or if they leave you a bad tip and write a weird note, that's feels so unfair. You know, it's like, yeah, I could have done something. We're here to make you feel good.
Saying use your words, that's something I hear a lot from friends who have toddlers, where the toddler is crying and they're like, no, use your words.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot comes out around food with your whatever's going on with you in your life.
It is true that this is an emotional job. It's one that requires a certain level of enthusiasm for interacting with other people.
Stephanie Robson is a restaurant design psychologist and senior lecturer at Cornell University. Sarah Brooke Curtis is a former server and now a radio producer. Some of her recent work you might be particularly interested in is on the podcast Gravy from the Southern Foodways Alliance, such as her episode about what you can read into menus, or her episodes about the writer and actor Eugene Walter, or how wedding catering works. Stick around for today's mini-illusionist, in which I will divulge the most condescending use of enjoy I have come across. A few years ago, I was staying in a hotel in Manchester. And you know those rubber mats you put into the bathtub so you don't slip? The one in this place came with instructions and a blurb. It said, "A shower can be the perfect way to refresh and invigorate. Thanks for mat-splaining the concept of a shower to me. To ensure you enjoy the experience to its full, we've provided this bath mat, should you wish to use it. For your safety, please follow these steps when using the mat." There are four steps. Four steps to using a rubber bath mat. Four steps. Step 1. Partially fill the bath with water, then firmly press the bath mat suckers to the bottom of the bath. Step 2. Ensure the mat is flat before and during use. Brace yourself, the tension is about to amp up. Step 3. When stepping into the bath, step carefully onto the mat. Or what? Or what? Now I'm feeling the fear. Step 4. Enjoy. How dare you tell me how to feel, bath mat? I will not enjoy this shower if I want. Now, maybe I've undervalued my own expertise in using a bath mat. Not to boast, I've been using bath mats without instructions for most, if not all, of my life, largely without incident, and perhaps took for granted my adequacy at bath mat use. But if you, bath mat, think that people can't be trusted to use a bath mat without instructions, maybe you shouldn't trust people to use a bathroom. Bathrooms are riddled with potential death traps. What if the command to enjoy makes us reckless, and in our pursuit of pleasure, we step carelessly onto the mat, breaching instruction 3? Anyway, you've stressed me way too much with instructions 1 to 3 for me to be able to obey instruction 4, even if I wanted to, which I don't, for reasons aforementioned. And then, just when you reach the critical point, the instructions stop! 3. Step carefully onto the mat. 4. Enjoy. End. Fan. That's it. So you don't even tell me what I'm supposed to be enjoying. Enjoy stepping carefully onto the mat? You don't credit me with the intellectual power to use you without multi-stage instructions, yet you assume I have the initiative to loop back to the introductory paragraph to deduce that I should complete instructions 3 and 4 whilst having a shower? I'm not even going to use you when I have a shower. How do you like that? You don't care, you're an inanimate object. Who's the bigger fool? The bath mat? The person incapable of using the bath mat without instructions, or the person arguing with a bath mat. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is latration, noun, usually facetious, barking. Try using it in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman. Thanks to Sarah Geis. The music is by Martin Austwick. You can see us play live. Check theillusionist.org/events. The show is on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. The handle is Illusionist Show. And over on the website, you'll find all the episodes, additional reading matter about each one, the full dictionary entry for the randomly selected words, transcripts, a lexicon of each word that has been discussed in the show. All of that is at theillusionist.org.